You ever see those movies on microscope looking at, you know, single cell simple creatures that are responding to, you know, stimuli, right? Just reflexively responding to stimuli, right? Whether it's the pH of the fluid or light or anything, right? And they're not giving it much thought, we presume, right? Everything is just a spontaneous, reflexive response to, right, the petri environment, right? And even the, the capacity to, right, cellular mitosis, split and replicate asexually, right? There's no... What are the reproductive processes at single cell creature level?
Meiosis and mitosis.
I mean, they're not gender specific, right?
They don't have as much fun as we do.
Maybe.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't take a whole lot of brain power to react.
So when you look at a conversation like this one, even though we're using language and more complex representational or expressive memes and means than small creatures, this is just...
It's a higher function.
It's bacterial.
Just a bunch of amoebas hanging out.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, look at the content that comes into your, what you call your mind, not that you have one, and the stimulus that occurs, and the reflection, the capacity for thought, pre-thought, subtle impulse that becomes thought, then becomes speech, and how that enters into the field of stimulus, and so then the other creatures that are in the local vicinity are responding and reacting, right? Politically, cleverly, romantically, however, right? And so that's what we're seeing. You just, right? Call it higher functioning, or certainly a broader, more curious palette of expression. But it's all absolutely arising spontaneously and then feeds on itself as someone has a thought or a phrase and someone else has a thought or a phrase. And maybe there's agreement or disagreement or a chuckle or this or that. And then maybe, you know, a small segue of nothing and another stimulus pours in.
It's also profoundly representative of my own thoughts. You know, they do the same thing. Thought comes in, another thought comes in the comment, another thought leads to another
Even
thought.
Whether it comes from the outside or inside.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter
people are saying.
It's like my thoughts. And lately, I've been really noticing that. Like, almost feel as if I've become insaner because I'm just looking at them like, none of you are making any sense. And it's just becoming, like, so clear. No, this can't be real. It makes no sense.
Conversational repartee is, of course, reflective of what's going on, right? In the privacy of your own thinking and associative process.
But it does seem like there's sort of an energetic source that can rise up through. And when it's, I don't know, somehow I see when it's more grounded to that image, there's greater depth in the reflections, you know? Because, I mean, you can have just pure bouncing around, boom, 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 just on visual stimulus, you know, the ball game or the whatever, you know? But when it's something that comes out more of a depth or a quietude or an earthy kind of a sort,
or there's hilarity that can sweep through. You know, in a group, sometimes groups come together to, like, create boisterousness and hilarity. And sometimes that sweeps through and then it's quiet. And it's like weather. And the clouds come moving through. And in a group, it's more, seems to be more apparent. Like,
there are other ways.
Groups of amoebas.
Surfer.
Yes.
can see how much interest we place, or how much value we place in this, call it, entire atmosphere of stimulus response. Call it higher functioning, representational, referential stimulus and response. Like the delight of humor, or the delight of a relationship that's working, or the delight of a relationship that maybe today is not working. Or the delight in what I'm going to do about it to soothe self because I'm hurt, wounded, frightened, angry, retributional, and vulnerable. So what am I going to do to soothe self? And maybe if there's a little taste or a little pinch of revenge, then wow, that's like soothe self plus revenge. Double. And all of these, right, behaviors, though they may seem profoundly inviolable, is just absolutely random chaos. Random chaos of a more or less spontaneous association with a rich profundity or mirage that lands where I am something, I believe in something, you are something, you believe in something, I did something, you did something. Maybe there's an inertia of history between us, whether it's family, spouse, sibling, you know, Monsanto, what the, right? Doesn't matter. And then we're often running on a mission from God, right? We like to believe that whatever we're doing next and the reasons that we presume or assume are the reasons we're doing what we're doing next is, for me, it's a mission, right? A mission from God. Because I'm sovereign. And the way I'm feeling right now is sovereign. And the justifications for the way I'm feeling right now is sovereign. And I'm going to do exactly what I'm going to do based on presumed willful endeavor, choice, preference, thoughtful cleverness as I... Aha! And that's the absolute behavioral and self-associative mirage we live in, you know, 24/7. Waking state, dreaming state, probably subtly in deep sleep. That's how profound, formidable the mirage of self is. And can reinforce itself with profound accuracy, pixelation, justification. So it loops back in on itself to continue to participate in what appears to be a longitudinal or temporal mirage about what I'm doing here. And the way that I... elicit, solicit, or demand joy, freedom, peace, sensation, security, artistic or other expressiveness, enjoyment of the arts, right? And priding myself on being a very happy and exquisite critic of everything that's occurred on the social stage, right? So I can be a PhD in religious studies and spiritual studies. I can be a guruphile, an anglophile, a pedophile. Right.
Guruphile?
Sure. Yeah. I could be into baseball and be a stats genius. Right? Look what this is capable of doing. I can build weaponry, agricultural solutions, environmental collapse. I mean, just give me an opposable thumb, a neocortex, and the imagination of self, and I will kick some ass. I'll kill myself and all of my friends in the process. But I don't, what do I care about consequences? Right? I'm just a mean motherfucker.
But the I part is nothing more than story around action that seems to be about something, but it's really just happening, right? The I part, just your like silly attempt to interpret and make it make sense.
It's like the original story, sort of the I assumption.
To the extent there is I, and you know, there's big I, call it gross or grotesque I, and there's really very, very subtle, small, sub-microscopic I. It's a very wide, right, palette of I-ness from moment to moment. The reason that might be important to play with is that I is so malleable and weird that we're not going to find a single solution that suggests why I, because it's way too strange, and it's way more subtle than we could even find any kind of tautology to justify. So you can talk about egoic I from pop Buddhism or Course in Miracles or wherever, and make up all kinds of fun stories about I, genesis of I, the suffering of I, the justification of I, the I am, the blah, 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 blah. And one creates a whole nother hallucination around that. But that's nothing, because none of that addresses, you could say, the remarkable subtlety of this presence taking itself to be an individuated, right? Individuated consciousness, an individuated body, an individuated experiencer. And since it's so remarkably subtle, you cannot have an explanation. It's not because. How about this is not because of anything?
Even the stories and the sense of I is not because of anything.
Not because of anything.
It's like...
Yeah. You see? I mean, there's all this. We can't live enough lifetimes to speak about this with respect to how profoundly pixelated this is, even in Doylestown, let alone the Earth as a Gaiac atmosphere of possibility, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at the table, forget it. If, you know, in the middle of the Reese's peanut butter cup, it's too big for anything to have and to be given an explanation. So there's no because. That's a little bizarre. Because we're very well trained that, oh yeah, well I know why that. Myself, my behavior, what I own, what I don't own, what I've just given away, what I wish I hadn't given away. Right? But I got this. I know why. And it's just incredible that you could say a remarkable palette dreaming itself in place instantaneously with no motive, no effort, no because, no consequence, no durability. Nothing can actually be found that's responsible for this or held accountable. Nothing. And still, it's like, wow. But when it comes to mind, or the habit of reference, the habit of accusing, this is because of, this is the reason for, this is the outcome of, but all of that, it's myth.
Well, and that's just because the whole thing is, I mean, so like if you strike the T-ball against one side, it's going to, the right angle move or whatever. I mean, that seems perfectly valid if you accept the whole deal as perfectly valid. But where the whole deal falls apart, that falls apart too. But I mean, that's the only way I can make sense of it, because certainly I see...
You cannot make sense of it. Not that way, not any way. Any attempt to make sense of it collapses the beauty of the myth into, right, an individuated organism hell-bent on making sense of, which is another mission from God, right? The Blues Brothers weren't fucking around. They were, like everything is, on a mission from God. You know, sometimes it looks like Syria, right? Or wherever there's unbearable, violent conflict and confrontation occurring because of oil. Now, as we can sense or just play with the exploration that this is not because, this is not about anything, there is absolutely no building blocks or evidence for any suffering anywhere to be found. Except maybe a good toothache. Yeah. Then you see that your intelligence, not your referential intelligence, but the recognition of, call it being itself, right? The irrefutability itself is present. But there's no deliverable. Not as you. There's no deliverable. So, right, if I get angry or impatient with my circumstances or the state of the garage or what I was hoping that someone else would do because they had committed to doing it or not doing it, is all, of course, part of, right, the stimulus response of a bacterial mirage. Once wounded, once slighted, once disappointed, once abandoned, once enmeshed, there's going to be a reaction, perhaps retributional, perhaps an acting in, perhaps an acting out, perhaps a soothing response, some kind of remedy that oneself has been mishandled by the likes of another, or even by oneself.
You're assuming agency.
At a minimum, yeah. Yeah.
It's also a universe creation.
Absolutely. Of course it is. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Which is the opposite of, we don't know what this is and it's not possible.
Yes, right. In a way, you could say that's right. If there were a thing and the opposite of a thing, presuming that you know what this is, what's happening, and that you're at risk by participating in it, that would be the opposite of, I don't know what this is, and therefore you are harmless and unharmable. But even speaking in those terms, it's too easy to trigger one's appetite for a kind of durational invulnerability, right? Like, I want to be me, my body, my joy of eating, right? My culinary expertise, my love of rock and roll. I want to be me, but I certainly don't want to be injured. I certainly don't want to be mishandled. I pretty much want to do what I want to do, feel what I want to feel, think what I want to think, get what I want to get, and not be, you know, insulted. I want to organize the universe kind of a certain way, because that's my personal aesthetic. Not just the garage, but, you know, how I store my socks. How someone else takes care of their dog. Because I got a lot of opinions.
That's a painful way to live.
Have you noticed?
Yeah.
But there's a lot at stake here, which is the same as saying there's absolutely nothing at stake here.
Nothing at what?
There's absolutely nothing at stake, which is can also be conveyed as there's a lot at stake. We might think that some kind of spiritual or yogic deliverable occurs in the likeness of my life. I don't actually have one, but there's the likeness of my life. So I want the fruit of my endeavor, my crystals, my pineal activation, right? Hanging out on a trapeze, going to masquerade balls. I want all of that stuff to land in my life in a pleasant, pleasing, reliable way. Because that would be the outcome of a successful spiritual endeavor. That I get what I want. But of course now it's more refined. Right? So the curious conundrum of desirefulness to please, to sate, to entertain self is remarkably subtle. And this kind of greed, not to accuse anybody of anything, but this kind of greed for experiencing going my way is at every possible level of expression and permutation. So what's at stake? Well, the imagination that this is because of something. The imagination that this is about something. The imagination that you are appear to be a durable entity in possession of the masterful skills of self-will, self-determinism, preference, discernment, and the fantastic glee of self-soothing with a pinch of revenge. Yes! That's what's at stake. Now, there's no way that you or any of us could voluntarily sign up for absolute annihilation. You wouldn't. You can't take the myth of self as profound and fully fracturable as it is and ask it to sign up for total annihilation. It's not crazy. It will refuse.
Where trickery comes in?
It has to. It has to.
How do you move from the myth of self to something that's beyond?
Well,
that's not possible unless you're living the self.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it has to do it. It has to sneak up on you. So early on, you're like, well, I'm suffering, I'm miserable, I'm this or that, my, you know, emotional habits continue to loop, I continue to meet the same kind of people, whether as an employer, whether as a partner, whether as it's like, oh my God, how do I get out of the loop of myself? This is unfucking believable, right? So we go to the therapist and the activator and the massage and the this and the shamanic, right, hoo-ha and the ayahuasca, and we go to all these places to try to get out from under the involuntary patterning that's making me so miserable at a psycho-emotional level. So I'm drawing again remedies for a ghost. Because as long as the confidence placed that this is because of something, that it's about something, that your life, if you do the right things, make the right choices, spend the right dollars, meet the right interventionists, will start looking better for the likes of you. And we get glimpses of it, right?
I mean, and oftentimes by those efforts.
Yes, it seems right. I mean, how did Wayne Dyer get to be him? I mean, free as a bird and the multimillionaire. Shit, this spiritual stuff works. It works. I have to figure out how to do that. So I'll try to emulate a very successful author, lecturer, right? Me generation spiritual accomplisher, because I want that too. I want to live in Hawaii. No, I want to live in Italy. Fuck, I want to live both places. I want to go to France now. I want to fly on John Travolta's 737 from Florida over to Georgia so I can get a fried peanut butter sandwich just like Elvis Presley. Now I can. Yeah, now I can. Hey, John, it's Jeff. You mind firing it up? Let's go, let's fly into New Orleans for peanut butter sandwiches. Okay, I'll send you a limo. As this sneaks up on you, you're not going to be happy. Because the whole myth and incentive of happy for self doesn't fly. There's no self, and there sure as hell isn't any happy. Now that can really deflate all the investment that we've placed in making sure this self is happy through the various things that we've committed to. There's no self and there's no happy. That could be very deflating. Again, you can't voluntarily sign up. Because any effort that you make, even the most pristine, spiritual, highly evolved, right, selfless gesture that you make is self. The slightest effort, the slightest gesture that's made is self, corruptible. Though you may have an interest in just trying to discover what it's like to be incorruptible, non-corruptible, invulnerable in all and every respect.
Like this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like this. So what happens is, or not, whatever this is or isn't sneaks up on you and will strip you bare of every idea you've ever had. But that's not so difficult to do because you've never had an idea. What it will strip you bare of is the association with self that appears spontaneously in this moment. So whatever the consciousness is, and it's not a thing, instead of it reacting and responding impersonally and exquisitely to the mirage of present impulse, it doesn't. While it continues to.
Wouldn't that suggest there are two things instead of one in that moment?
No. No, because nirvana and samsara are not two things. Nirvana being, you could just say, non-reactive immersion in nothing at all, by nothing at all, with no takeaway. And still, this permutation doesn't skip a beat. It doesn't skip a beat. It doesn't need to. So for the blue pillar, there's the ongoing association with this impersonal myth, this palette of wonder, being apparently individuated. For the red pillar, that myth is gone. That doesn't mean you join with Nemo,
I think, wasn't it?
Finding Nemo?
Nemo. Yeah.
They use the same name in the both movies?
I guess so.
Nemo the fish? Nemo was the fish. Neo was the liberator.
Yeah. Right, let's get that. Let's get that.
Let's get that clear. Yeah. So it's not like by taking the red pill you get thrown out of your cell and now you fight the machines with sophisticated weaponry. That's bullshit.
It is.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you see, I mean, you see how he got the machines to buy into, right, symbiotic living, right? The deal was, I'll take care of Mr. Smith, you leave us alone, right? Because the machines, as good as they were.
Okay.
The machines, as good as they were, couldn't take down Mr. Smith, but Neo the Liberator could. That was the deal. Otherwise, the humans were fucked because all of their weaponry was not doing it against the machine culture. Yeah, but I don't know what's the point of all that. This will reveal to you of its own nature and accord that you are not anything. That it is not anything.
You're pillless. You're not a purple pill.
You are
the purple pill. You're not the purple.
You're pillless.
So the nemesis of my life is actually the savior of all of us. It's boredom.
Well put. I mean,
which do you say?
And savior.
Boredom. It'll get you there. No, I just mean, you know. This exhausts itself. It's not trying to achieve satisfaction. Then I think suddenly you realize you're bored beyond belief. It just makes you ready. Perhaps.
Yeah, there's something. Boredom has a role. We're bored as primates, which is really just a charade for restless. We're restless because of the myth of individuation.
The fantasy of a self will ultimately, I think, always lead to boredom.
Always lead to boredom.
A fantasy of a self will ultimately always lead to boredom.
Misunderstanding or misrepresenting what this actually is or isn't is boredom.
Yeah.
And restlessness and vulnerability and retributional disappointment and everything. I mean, even within the expressive possibilities of human behavior, is it infinite or is it finite? Is it miraculously strange and unpredictable, or are there 8 reliable enneagrams? You know what I mean?
The self will always categorize, whereas the non-self just will experience.
Yeah. Yeah. it particularizes with glee. At the same what time that it's impossible to particularize. So the boundary field of self as born and irritable, restless and bored, is what we're trying to medicate, trying to ameliorate, trying to soothe, whether through boisterous activities or even contemplative activities. Once we're enrolled in remedial impulse, you're too late. Once we're enrolled in remedial impulse, we miss something.
Which is what we do most of the time.
Yes. We've taken delivery of an incomprehensible miracle as self. Then we are basically committed to remedial behavior. The self is remedial behavior. It's not like it suffers from. It's the same.
And then we become dysfunctional members of society.
Well, yes. I mean, that the geometry of self as remedial disagreement, disagreeability, is dysfunctional at its root.
More clearly said in my head, misrepresented. Because you function or dysfunction would assume an evaluative entity of some sort or an identification.
Yes, of course. Like, it's okay if the species dissolves through whatever, global warming or thermonuclear devastation or, you know, Ebola gone wild. That's cool.
Let's go Ebola.
Wait, you never know.
Now, we don't really want reality. We might think enlightenment is the shit, but that's just a toy story.
It's just a mind-created future something.
Yeah, that's a yoga toy store. It's kind of like Disney's store at the mall. No, it's absurd. But open up any copy of Creating Community and look at all the sales persons selling enlightenment in the yoga toy store, because it's going to set you on the straight path. It's going to assist you with your addictions, loneliness, health issues, acting out, acting in, getting a parking spot, getting a partner, one that will stay and obey because they're your fucking soulmate. Hey.
One that stays and obeys.
Yeah. What is your soulmate? Someone that stays and obeys.
Hey, get my dog to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Careful what you ask for.
Yeah, right. How strange it is that we want to impose stay and obey on our partner when we can't even do it with or to ourselves.
I'd be the last person.
And still I want a soulmate. Yikes.
Okay.
But we become neurotic with symptoms of self, the irritability, the restlessness, the boredom, the retribution, the, right, ecstasy of self. And so we're always stuck in remedial behavior. We're always stuck in insufficiency. Because self is not real. It's a simulation. But we take it to be a suggestive permanency that will do whatever we want to do to insist on security and spiritual fulfillment in my future. But we don't see that we're just messing around with a simulation. So let's say enlightenment is not ameliorative. Fuck. Shit. I read all those books. I went to exotic places. I paid money. I took initiations. I ate differently. I even slept with that guy. That was a big mistake.
You did?
Or a girl. That was a big mistake. Because I was hoping that enlightenment was the shit, the ameliorative of my restlessness and boredom. That it was going to be the solid remedy for a simulation.
Just another simulation.
Just another simulation. Now you see, that's why this is not, can never be voluntary. Why would a simulation raise its hand and say, yeah, pull the plug?
I want to be destroyed, please.
Right. Did Hal?
Dave.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Daisy, give me your answering room.
It's been obsessed with Excel lately, software. It's like that standing up and saying, I'm not doing these formulas anymore.
Yeah, thank you. God bless you. Excel rebels.
I'm not doing VLOOKUPs anymore.
So if this is creeping up on you stealthily, it's not necessarily looking for your consent. Because it knows you won't give it. It also knows that it's the, you could say, parent of simulation. And remarkably non-violent and non-intrusive. So samsara as simulation and the impossibility of any satisfaction actually occurring in the simulation is the offspring of nirvana. It's not really independently existing. But if you ask 100 people who is ready to give up the simulation in its entirety to end up with nothing, you're not that many hands are going up. You can even have that, you can ask that question in the midst of a Vipassana retreat. after everyone sat on a cushion for 9 days or a month or 3 months. And I don't know if any hands will go up. Even after all of that self-imposed sensory deprivation to get into the most sublime mindfulness known to womankind. No one's going to say, yeah, close this down over here. So reality, having birthed the delusion, the simulation of samsaric activity, simply creeps up on itself and says, okay, we'll just turn that switch. We'll just turn that off. You can't find an explanation. Not for I, not for not I. Not for suffering, not for not suffering. Not for nirvana, not for something. You cannot find an explanation.
Like the red tide.
Like the
red tide.
Yes.
Can you explain the red tide?
Sometimes it may be very pleasant as this creeps up on you and reveals to you that you're nothing. Sometimes it can be hot, like as in burning, you know, immolating, highly vibrant, kind of like the core of a nuclear weapon once it's, you know, gone into chain reaction. So after however many episodes, one becomes less interested in the rubric of enlightenment as an ameliorative for self. So nothing that's occurred in your life is all that relevant. It doesn't mean you're irrelevant, because that would be saying too much.
Still mean that you're
irrelevant. See, the collapse of durability, the collapse of duration, as a psychiatric extrusion, as a consciousness, is bizarre. I mean, when you're on the retreat, it's almost like you can't wait to get home to take your, you know, enlightenment on the road. Right? And it does. You see, we're always, always acquisitive. For the sake of future experiencing.
Yeah. That's what enlightenment's all about. I'll get that cookie in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Dime store enlightenment, which is how most of it's sold, is I'm going to buy, acquire, win, earn this thing, and show it off like my new, you know, Mazda 3 Sport. And I go for a joyride in my enlightenment. Boy, I sure hope other people recognize and or acknowledge it. What's the point of driving down the street in your Corvette if everyone goes, ho, hum? So this simulation is acquisitive. Why shouldn't it be? It's a simulation. It loves stimulation. It loves reference making. In this case, you know, the continuity of a highly vibrant and creative and expressive bioluminosity known as me. You never would volunteer for void. So the revelation of void has to trick you. It has to sneak up on you. And it can, because it's responsible for the simulation in the first place.
job because why?
Yeah, why's good. Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about the subject.
Yeah. Why is one of the simulation's favorite ways of, you could say, creating more deferral?
Re-energizing.
Yeah, that's right. Captain, the batteries on the holodeck are starting to drain. Why? Oh, they're back to full power. Thank you, Captain. You're back to full power.
That's the worst imitation of Scotty I've ever heard.
I'm not good.
I thought it was pretty good.
That's because he took dilithium crystals before.
Yeah, I snorted some dilithium before. They're starting to drain.
That's better. Much better.
Oh, good.
A little more Celtic.
Yeah. So as a simulation, you go from blue pill to red pill when it's your turn to begin to see the nature of your miraculous experience as simulation. How many people do you know that would have a fraction of this conversation?
They're all here.
Yeah, they're all here. So you see how strange and perhaps uncommon it is in the social milieu that anyone even gives much thought, curiosity, affection to the notion of one's profound experience as a simulation. It's just kind of rare.
Well, it doesn't work to get you anyway.
Well, it's not about its utility or destination. It's just the simple arising of a curiosity that appears in your experience, in your consciousness, that goes, well, fuck me, maybe this is a simulation. Right? It's the genesis, it's the birth of suspicion.
Most people are looking for utility, not curiosity.
Yeah, most folks are not, let's say, consciously able or willing or interested to articulate sufficient suspicion about the nature of their first-hand experience to see if that eggs them on to further discovery. So the suspicion will, over call it time, lead to ruination. Which is the ruination of the impulse to make this better. To acquire. To get the hottest explanation coming off the Neo Advaita press. Now, ruination can be a lot of fun or none at all.
And you don't get to choose.
No, you don't get to choose.
They turn it involuntary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, ruination, like all of it, is completely involuntary, right? Being a blue pillar from birth until death is not, you know, by preference. Discovering suspicion has become loud enough in your life that you can't ignore it is not voluntary. Ruination and how well you flail along the way is also completely involuntary. Revelation that this is not about anything or not because of anything is also involuntary. after a while, why not now, though you wouldn't really want to wish it on your worst enemy. What will happen to you if you become absolutely disinterested in experiencing?
The same thing as being interested. In other words, it's involuntary. It's to distinguish one from the other is part of the simulation, the dance, the so what kind of thing. Okay.
Maybe.
I'm full, I'm empty. I found it. I lost it. Where did I go? Shit. Thought I had one of those. It's a gratuity for some purpose or utility.
You see how invested we are in the miracle of experiencing.
In manipulating the miracle of experiencing, or convincing ourselves we can, or that something will work.
Well, the reason you or any of us would be inspired to manipulate is because that's a symptom of being interested in it in the first place. That's a simulation repercussion or response to being interested in experiencing in the first place.
Wouldn't that suggest then being disinterested is preferable?
You have to feel this, because any way that we start, right, speaking about it, can't go deep enough. Yeah, it can't go deep enough. And deep in this case is not intellectually deep, spiritually deep. It's texture, it's feeling, it's the nature of direct encounter, right? That's deep. Direct encounter is, we'll say, is deep.
Instead of my mind looking at contrast.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would it feel like if the interest in what am I going to do about myself, right, flatlined? Because all of this drama, right, all of the retreats and all of the interest and the motive for ameliorating dissatisfaction or improving one's spiritual IQ is after, in a manner of speaking, after there's primary interest in experiencing that it's about something, that it's because of something, that it has, or I insist that it have, a certain utility, and now I need to optimize it. You see how quickly it cascades. And it doesn't cascade in time. The cascading nature of the simulation spontaneously arises outside of the rubric of space or time. That space and time are the offspring of it. Space-time is the offspring of the cascading of the simulation. If there's a universe, the entire universe is the outcome of the cascading of nothing at all. Now, the physicists may look at that as a soul event occurring after what? I don't know. As the Big Bang, right? Call it the genesis of creative impulse, prior to which there was nothing, but where was the nothing? Right? You see, you're right, Big Bang just falls apart so easily when you try to look at it as a genesis event occurring someplace in a place where the universe seems to be right now. Right? But the metaphor is this. The metaphor is actually this, not something that happened 14 billion years ago. But the metaphor of Big Bang is the recognition that the cascading, that the dreaming is, it's just this. And its permutation does what we could call the visible or known universe in less than an instant. Fuck 14 billion years. What the hell is that? It's nothing. It's really nothing. I mean, less than nothing. It's less than nothing on Stephen Hawking's ass. So what happens with us is that the typical primate, the blue pill primate, is absolutely overwhelmed, overcome, and for good reason, by the miraculous expressiveness of a simulation. And all of the social, biologic repartee that accompanies it. How could you refuse this?
Tempting stuff.
Pretty tempting stuff. Pretty tempting. However, the myth of self-realization, suggested by, wisdom holders of the ages, that they simply were pointing out, whether in writing or not at all, or through verbal or sung tradition, hey, this isn't what you think. That's all it is. A few red pillars along the way were like, fuck me, this isn't what you think. And so that created, a handful of world religions and a lot of neurosis and a lot of money changing.
I like the way you put it, self-realization.
Now, if this is creeping up on you, well, I don't know. Fantastic. Congratulations. You're toast. Run.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah. What do you say?
Chill.
Yeah, chill. Why not? But the depthful, meaning direct encounter, textural encounter with this is right not about comparisons. You can peer into the impersonally arising nature of the simulation, the cascading of the simulation, just here, just now. So now your interest is in a different electron orbit, you see? There's still interest. Call it fascination, immersion. But now the interest in immersion and fascination is not with the symptoms appearing in the simulation. It's with the miraculous nature of the simulation itself. And that's non-dual. Because it sneaks up on you, it's non-dual. Meaning your fascination with what this already is or isn't is not being processed or filtered through comparison, through mind, through reference, through explanation, through why, through because of. Right? Perfect identity. That this is so is of the nature of perfect identity. Not from the vantage point of a creature born into it, on its surface, flailing about to get my fair share of joy.
Did you say identity? Did you say di-identity?
Perfect identity.
Oh, identity.
Yeah.
See, that my mind was making sense out of di-identity, that there is no one, but it's only one. Sorry.
No.
Can't help it.
Any metaphors? Fine. But even perfect identity is bizarre, because perfect identity is the same as saying none at all. Because if it's perfect identity, it can't be with a thing, identified with a thing that's other than itself, right? It can only be itself, and therefore no other. So perfect identity is whatever this is or isn't, with no other, no otherness. So that's as good as saying no identity, absence of all identity. So that's the nirvanic tickle. Cessation and nibbana is fractured identity, meaning I get down with the simulation as a disparate entity and negotiate to the grave, or I become suspicious, thankfully ruined, which may merge, fuse as perfect identity, which is no identity at all. In that respect, the nirvana is fulfilled. All that suggests is that nirvana has just found, let's say in your experience, disinterest in its samsaric apparitional nature. Oh, it's like I dream. It's like Nirvana throws up his hands and say, okay, I dream. Right? In that respect, it's free of the permutation or any identification with the dreaming. This intelligence is formidable, not trivial. It's the power and profundity, the irrefutability of you, not being pushed around by stimulus response. Though you can still make a cup of tea and find the toilet. But you see, when we speak of it like this, you know, you don't see a big show of hands. Yeah, like, give me that. You'd be crazy.
Yeah, well, it's the same as telling somebody their entire life is the same as making mouse. So, like, oh, they're going to die. Sorry, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And you and everything you hold to be important.
Yeah.
Pretty much like Nikki's life.
Right. In our cult, when you get a new name, it happens to be of a Disney character.
I'll be sneezy. You can be sneezy.
Yeah. We have a little ritual, you know, you wear like white and a flower, maybe a handkerchief, like TM. And you come in and we give you the name Dumbo. Dumbo, so glad you joined us. Yeah, I'm Minnie.
Well, it just doesn't go over real well when you lay into your story and you want people to buy in and they say, well, get over yourself.
No one likes to be told that.
No.
I think I said it to Jamie
last time. It's presumptuous.
Yeah, he's so over himself. Yeah, no one really likes to be told that. Yeah,
because someone's comparing what they're seeing to something else and then declaring.
Well, we're easily insulted. We're easily insulted, easily threatened. Yeah, right. He's not guzzling.
Yeah,
he's swishing.
I'm not seeing any expectoration. Maybe it's, you know.
I haven't seen you spit it out.
Wow.
I think you're supposed to swallow it.
No, I'm not.
Interesting point.
Well, see if he comes back from the restroom.
He's in there, actually.
Oh.
I wasn't.
It's a different.
He was happy. He was happier than that.
I'll be Eeyore.
I already tried that.
Didn't work.
Didn't work. I'll be Piglet or something. Who else is first?
Snow White.
Poof, you're Snow White.
I get to wear print dresses.
Yeah, she only wore one. Well, in the movie.
You don't know what motive. There's no motive any longer for you if you're not interested in ameliorating suffering. If you're not interested in ameliorating suffering, you don't have any more motive to goddamn get enlightened.
Or to do anything.
Perhaps.
That's true hopelessness. Like, if you set down that motive, it doesn't feel like it's over. It's like, holy shit, nothing really means anything.
It's terrifying.
It can be
melancholic
at first because it's... Like,
that's why I say no one volunteers for this.
Exactly.
You can't volunteer for it. You could be really upset about shit and go to the guru's house across the world after you... sell the stock that your grandmother gave you and say, help me. You can do that, right? But you think the reason you're doing it is because
you're going to get something.
Well, because you're suffering and someone had better figure this fucking thing out.
But there's someone to help stop it.
All
there's
that.
Something that can help stop it.
All of it.
And you set all that down, all of a sudden you're just laid wide open to, I suffer. There's no more negotiating. It's like the invitation over and over is stop negotiating, man, and I keep negotiating and I get more and more and more. The more I negotiate, the more I get. It doesn't work.
Well, remember, negotiation is a reflex to what?
Well, it's like starting to sink and I'm frantically swimming faster, faster, faster. It's not working. I'm still sinking. Yeah! Shit.
You gotta do something.
Cancel it again, but then I might just call up and get another room. I'm telling you, it's possible.
Why don't you just give it to a poor person and they give
you
the
paper?
I thought about
that this morning. I'm like, maybe I can get Francine to go. She'll put me out of my misery. I'll drive her up there for me.
Andrew, what?
Yeah, where has he been?
He abandoned us.
Give it to Kenny. I mean, Francine.
Give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything.
Yeah.
The quarrel that any of us have with suffering is part of the simulation.
It's not about stopping the quarrel, it's about seeing, it's just...
Guess what? It's not about anything. Because the moment it's about something, you've made it about you. And the moment you've made it about you, you have to sign up for the retreat again.
Or cancel it again.
Yes, as long as it's about you, there's reason to sign up and cancel.
And they're about equal.
Yep.